Happy Thursday from Eureka, California at Dharma Abbey. That's a little bit of Buddhist humor, by the way. It's kind of a play on Downton Abbey, if you've ever seen the British TV series. Except here we don't have servants or aristocrats. It's just me, the abbot of the abbey, and then my three small dogs, and my late mom's cat that I adopted, Sweet Pea. So in the background, for background music, while I'm talking today, I'm playing Tina Turner. Is a Nichiren Buddhist. She's actually SGI Soka Gakkai. She lives in Switzerland. Yes, that Tina Turner, the famous R&B rock singer. She's chanting Daimoku. I recommend that you look on YouTube, and she does lots of really cool, beautiful chants with background music and harmonies and stuff using Lotus Sutra, and she does Daimoku, and then she also says Gongyo, chanting chapters 2 and 16 of the Lotus Sutra. So, the title of today's episode is When Worlds Collide. So, the reason for that title is because later this evening, with my best friend Denise, who I consider to be kind of like my Buddhist big sister, we're both members of the same Nichiren Shoshu Temple. So we're having a Zoom online meeting tonight with people across the country and maybe across the world, who knows. We don't know how many people will show up. Could be 5, could be 500, we don't know. You are welcome to join us. You can find the Facebook event with all of the joining info if you go to our Facebook page, Secular Lotus Buddhists, plural, and look under events. And then it starts at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time, and 7:30 p.m. I think that's Central Chicago Time. So, and the title of our video conference is Introduction to Nichiren Buddhism. So it's going to be very interesting because there's myself, secular atheist, Nichiren Buddhist, my friend Denise, who is an extremely devout and orthodox Nichiren Shoshu Buddhist and has been for 30 some years. We may have a new friend of mine who is an ordained Nichiren Shu priest. We may have our Nichiren Shoshu priest from our the temple that Denise and I belong to, as well as some SGI people, Zen people, people who are not Buddhist, just interested in Buddhism, Christians, Jews, Muslims, Hindus, Jains, spiritualists, who knows, a giant mix. So it should be pretty interesting. So I would invite all of you to come join us. It's going to last about 30 to 40 minutes. We haven't upgraded our Zoom account to go past 40 minutes, so it's going to be limited to that. And I think we're also limited to around 100 people, so it'll be first come, first serve. So that's happening. I've had an interesting day. I woke up at 3:30 a.m. this morning with a horrible, horrible migraine. I'm on disability for what's called chronic intractable migraine with aura. What a mouthful that is. So I have migraines like anywhere from 4 to 6 days per week that I try and manage with medication, but mostly unsuccessfully. So a lot of the times I just have a migraine and I'm just kind of sitting in my house in the dark with sunglasses on, popping a leaf, and, you know, with no noise, no TV, no radio, just being quiet. And then, of course, when I can, I do my Lotus Sutra meditation and chanting, usually pretty quietly. And sometimes I broadcast that live stream on, right now it's being broadcasted when I do it, on Facebook Live, on our Facebook page, Secular Lotus Buddhists. So I'm feeling a little bit wonky from not getting a lot of sleep last night. So forgive me if I seem a little woozy. So I think tonight's Zoom talk is going to be interesting. We'll be talking about Intro to Nichiren Buddhism, and we'll get multiple, sorry, my dogs are barking in the background. They're playing outside. You know, so we'll get the kind of very ultra-Orthodox Nichiren Shoshu perspective. We may get a Nichiren Shu perspective, which is another school of Nichiren Buddhism, which is a little bit more flexible and less orthodox. And then, of course, we'll have my perspective, which is secular, a.k.a. atheist, Nichiren Buddhist. And then various other opinions from people coming from different backgrounds, either different Buddhist school backgrounds like Zen, or another Nichiren school, SGI, or Theravada Buddhism, Pure Land Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism, Christianity in all of its flavors, Islam. So it could be a pretty interesting conversation. I don't know how we're going to squeeze it all into 30 to 40 minutes, but we'll see how that works. So again, I hope you will tune in. We are going to be doing video during that live stream so that everyone can show themselves and maybe get the chance to introduce themselves if we have enough time, depending on how many people tune into the Zoom meeting. Just so that we can all see and hear each other. And then either Denise or I will control muting and unmuting the microphones and letting people kind of use the raise hand button inside of Zoom to let us know that you want to speak or ask a question. So I think it'll be good. Denise and I are talking about having, we had talked about it when I lived in Indianapolis, not far from her. I only lived a few blocks away from her and her family. But for just a whole bunch of different reasons, we never got around to it before I moved back home to California. So, and then of course, I'm doing what's kind of, ironically, or maybe not ironically, similar to what Buddha explained in Chapter 2 of the Lotus Sutra, Expedient or Skillful Means, where he explained that during the 50 to 60 years of his adult life that he wandered throughout India and taught and preached and, of course, became enlightened. And told, you know, hundreds if not thousands of stories and parables and teachings, that basically in his final teaching, the Lotus Sutra in Chapter 2, he explained that it wasn't that he was lying, but as he as he was teaching over those 50 to 60 years, he told stories and parables and teachings in context with the audience that he was speaking to. So using a lot of what I call allegorical or mythical or symbolic figures and events. How that's relevant to me is that I'm still a member of my Nichiren Choshu temple, but I am, of course, creating this kind of, or attempting to create this kind of new school of secular Nichiren Lotus Sutra-based Buddhism, which does not really line up at all with the ultra-Orthodox belief system of Nichiren Choshu, the temple and school of Buddhism that I belong to. So I haven't yet explained that to my priest, and I haven't explained it yet to my friend Denise, although I think she suspects it. I'm revealing that information little by little, depending on context and timing. So I'm not lying or trying to hide anything, but I want to wait for the appropriate moments and timing to do all of it. Being an LGBTQ person, it's a little bit similar to coming out of the closet, although I was never really in the closet myself. I was always just who I was, kind of dating women, men, back and forth. And then finally in the latter part of my, or the latter half of my 54 years, I was married to a guy for 15 years and lived with another one for 5 years. So, anyways, I guess it's, even though I've never really come out of the closet, I guess maybe this is a little bit like that. I'm coming out of the closet as a secular Nichiren Lotus Sutra-based Buddhist, and especially about creating this new school or organization to support that those views and that approach, inspired by Stephen Batchelor, who has written many books about being an atheist Buddhist. He's a former priest, I believe, former Zen Buddhist priest, I think, who lives in the UK, and of course the Secular Buddhism Association, and then there's also really, I think I mentioned it in my first episode of this podcast, the secular Buddhist podcast itself, which is really awesome. So that is kind of the plan for today. I've already done my morning chanting and meditation. And since our meeting is kind of early at 5:30, I'm not sure if I'll do my chanting meditation before that meeting or after. Depends on how I feel and how my head is feeling. From the migraine. I still have migraine, but it's not at a, I think I have to go to the ER thing like it was at 3:30 this morning. It's a little bit more manageable. There was something else I wanted to talk about today, and because I'm having migraine fuzzy brain, it's kind of escaped me for the moment. Oh, yeah, so The thing that's going on with the COVID-19 pandemic, I think we can all agree it's really scary. I've been locked inside my house for 10.5 weeks, not really going outside except into my own backyard and onto the front porch to get delivered groceries and stuff, because I'm considered a high risk person, because I get chronic kidney stones and infections. So evidently COVID-19 attacks the kidneys, so my doctors want me not going out into the public. So I mostly have everything delivered here to the house, and I'm a little bit stir crazy, but the good thing about being stir crazy is it has inspired me to do, to kind of wrap my mind around this secular Lotus Buddhist's little idea that I have. And so the legal papers are being filed right now, just so that we are a 501c3 nonprofit, a quote-unquote religious organization, but I don't see us as being religious. I see us as being more of a social welfare organization, but I guess that's okay. So, yeah, just kind of thinking about that in between migraines and hanging out with the dogs, growing my pandemic apocalypse vegetable garden out back. The food supply chain where I live has been really super interrupted. I think it's a little bit better now, but for the past 2 months, it was just really crazy. Like, the Instacart people would, you know, I would put an order in online and they would go to the supermarket and then basically take pictures in the app and text them to me of just empty shelves, you know. I'm vegetarian, so have been for 30 years, but I, you know, so I don't have to worry about meat or poultry or any of that stuff, but even just trying to get produce and rice and beans and things like that was just really crazy, impossible. I actually had friends mailing me stuff from across the country, you know, in Wyoming or wherever, where they weren't having this food supply chain problem. So I'm growing food just in case the food supply chain messes up or gets worse, or in case we have a second a surge, because they're reopening the states right now, which I think is a really stupid idea. I've been telling my friends, you know, of course, the three Buddhist poisons are lust, greed, and stupidity. And there's really a lot of stupidity going on right now in our federal administration, with Trump and his cronies and not following science. And I think the CDC put out guidelines about a month ago about reopening states, regions, counties, and that there had to be 14 days of declining cases and deaths. And despite that not being the case almost anywhere, all these states, especially in the Southeast, and mostly Republican states, Trump-supporting states, they're just opening everything wide up. The beaches, restaurants, bars, movie theaters. I don't know. It's really scary. I mean, they're talking about opening things in a very gradual sense here in California, but I haven't really seen it yet. I have kind of tiptoed and taken, you know, walks around the neighborhood to get some sunlight and fresh air, but of course I'm in gloves and a N95 mask, and but you know, I see so many people. We've had an order from the county health department, and I think also from California State Governor Newsom, that it's legally mandatory to wear masks in public. But I would say more than 50% of people here in Humboldt County or in Eureka, where I live, are just not doing it. So I basically just don't go near anyone. Mainly all of my socializing is, you know, online through social media or Zoom calls. I think a lot of us may be in that situation. So I think we can just kind of hope that things improve and that a vaccination comes soon. I think about it a lot when I'm chanting and meditating. Again, not because chanting and meditating are prayers, because there's no one to pray to, but more just kind of like focused intent thinking. And I'm hoping that people who are, you know, the scientists and the epidemiologists who are developing these vaccines and treatments, I hope that they are doing something in their lives, whether that's yoga, meditation, Zen, whatever it is, to clear their minds so that they can focus clearly on getting us the vaccine or the treatments. I just know for myself, chanting and meditating really helps me clear my mind and kind of strip out all the garbage and kind of focus on the things that are important, and detaching from things that are not important. So there's a concept in Buddhism, of course, called no self, and also non-attachment, and I'll get into those in a later podcast episode. They're pretty interesting concepts, but what I can say is that practicing non-attachment, so in the three named Buddhist poisons called out by Buddha himself, so lust, I mean, usually we think of lust in, you know, kind of sexual terms. Lust doesn't necessarily mean just in sexual terms. Lust is clinging or craving to anything or anyone or any place. And so non-attachment does not mean aloof or non-caring, but what it means is that you're living in the moment and that everything is constantly changing. We're changing. We're not the same person we were 5 minutes ago. Our molecules are changing. You know, the sofa that I'm sitting on is not the same as it was 5 minutes ago. The molecules are changing. And so non-attachment is, it's hard to explain, but to perhaps oversimplify it, is not clinging to things, and not craving things, especially things that we don't need. So non-attachment would be kind of like, I'm trying to explain it in maybe layman's terms or non-Buddhist terms. It's basically just kind of like letting things slide, like not getting upset or angry if, you know, for example, okay, so I'll give it a recent example. Totally by accident, I was on the internet, as usual, and I came across an ad for this cute little mini Victorian 1904 mini Victorian mansion here in Eureka, and the price was unbelievable, $139,000, which, you know, it's like 2,000 square feet, and in fairly decent cosmetic condition. I later found out that there are some structural issues, and that's why it's not, it's 139 instead of being more like 199, but, real estate here in Humboldt County is still pretty affordable compared to the rest of California. I mean, this little $139,000 house in Seattle or San Francisco, where I've essentially lived most of the past 28 years would easily be, you know, depending on whether it's Seattle or San Francisco, would easily be $2 to $5 million. But anyway, so my point was, I started looking into it. I called the real estate agent, you know, who put me in touch with a mortgage broker. And I'm not a wealthy guy, by the way. And, you know, so talking to me about, oh, there are tenants, you know, it's the owner rents it to tenants, and they're really obstinate. And of course, you know, he's been, evidently has been trying to evict them for whatever reason, for non-payment of rent or something. But because of the governor's order on no evictions during the pandemic, the owner can't evict them. So even if I wanted to see the inside of the house, I can't, because the tenants are refusing to allow the real estate agents or the owner to show it. So I've only seen the outside through driving by, and then the photographs that are online. But in talking to the mortgage broker, you know, it's because it has some structural issues, which I don't fully comprehend, but I know about a couple of them. You know, it would need kind of like this complex, like FHA 203K loan that includes like a loan for the construction, and then all these requirements around, you know, FICO scores and down payments and PMI and, you know, all this stuff. And so I just turned 54 on Monday, and I've been a renter my whole life because I've lived in, you know, really big cities where buying real estate, if you're not wealthy, was just impossible, right? Boston, New York City, San Francisco, Seattle. So now that I'm in rural Humboldt County in Northern California, where real estate is more affordable. I mean, real estate here would seem expensive to someone in maybe like Alabama or in the Midwest, but certainly by West Coast standards, the real estate prices here are extremely reasonable. But I just kind of decided, after hearing kind of like all this disappointing, you know, information and, you know, arcane Byzantine procedures and bureaucracy and, you know, requirements and tax forms and, you know, all the typical things that home buyers go through, but because I've never been through it before, it all just seems kind of scary, right? And so I just kind of decided, I meditated about it, and I was like, you know, I'm going to try to get it, but like, if I don't get it, it's fine. I mean, I'll just find something else, or I'll stay where I am and keep renting, because I love where I live now, actually. So that's kind of non-attachment, because when you're non-attached and non-clinging and non-craving, you don't get that like destitute level of like desperation or disappointment. You just kind of like, okay, if I get it, fantastic. If I don't, okay, you know, instead of getting angry or upset or any of those kind of negative emotions. So I find it really helpful. Oh, and I hope you're enjoying Tina Turner chanting in the background. She's chanting Ganya right now. I think she's chanting chapter 2 of the Lotus Sutra in Chinese, pronounced in a Japanese Shindoku way, which is the traditional way to chant the Lotus Sutra in Nichiren Buddhism. There are some people who have taught themselves how to chant the Lotus Sutra in English, but it's very, I don't think there's anything wrong with chanting it in you know, your own native language, but it just changes the whole rhythm and meter and, you know, feeling. I mean, one of the benefits to chanting in that Japanesified, even though I know that's not a word, Shindokuized original Chinese characters, is that no matter, you know, you could meet with Nichiren Buddhists from anywhere in the world where you don't even have a language in common, but you could chant together, because Nichiren Buddhists all over the world, of whatever flavor, 99.9% of the time, chant in that Japanesified, Shindoku'd Chinese, and so it's basically universal. So that's one benefit. But I also see the flip side where, you know, it might be a good idea that we offer people the option to chant, you know, in their native tongue, you know, whether that's English or German or French or Spanish or Russian or Ukrainian or Dutch or Swedish or, you know, whatever the case may be, right? So, so that's something I'm giving some thought to. So that's basically it for today. I just wanted to tell you about the Colliding of Worlds Zoom meeting tonight. It should be pretty interesting. And I hope you'll join us. Have a good rest of the day. And again, I encourage you to look up Tina Turner, Nam-myoho Renge-kyo, Daimoku, or Gangyo are the keywords to search for on YouTube. And the visualizations, the imagery, and both her chanting with the harmonies and the backgrounds, the backup singers, is just, it's pretty astounding. It's pretty beautiful. So I'm going to let you listen to her for a few seconds, and then I will end this podcast episode. So have a great evening. Nam-myoho Renge-kyo. Jojo,